Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. John Steele here again, hosting this week. Coming up, we have all of the news from the weekend, from J2 and J3, which is finally underway. So there's a round one review and round two preview coming up with Magic Mike Innes in the J-Talk Short Corner Minipod later in the show. Also, I had a chat with Lewis about Tokyo Verde on a J2 tip. That's coming up later. First of all, though, I'll review what happened in J2 on Saturday afternoon in round three. At Yamaha Stadium, it finished Iwata 2, Yamagata 1, so Iwata get their first win of the season and at the same time end Yamagata's 100% record. The home side took the lead with a penalty from Ryo Germain about 7 minutes before half-time. Germain was upended by the Yamagata goalkeeper Masaaki Goto, and the loose ball from that challenge actually ended up going into the net. So it was a good job that Germain scored the penalty because the referee blew the whistle for the spot kick while the ball was kind of bounding into the open goal. But yes, Germain took the penalty very confidently, and it was 1-0 to Iwata at half-time. Yamagata pulled level in the 74th minute, Hiroki Noda powering in a header from Yudai Konishi's free kick out wide on the Yamagata right. But 5 minutes after that, Iwata scored what proved to be the winner thanks to a slick one-touch passing move down their left flank. Ko Matsubara played the ball across the edge of the Yamagata penalty area, and for some reason Iwata centre-back Ricardo Grassa was on hand on the edge of the penalty area. He arrived to collect the ball, and then he played in Masaya Matsumoto, who coolly finished past Goto for 2-1. And that's how the game finished, Iwata 2, Yamagata 1. Although Yamagata nearly snatched a draw in the final minute of stoppage time when a free kick from Konishi from about 20 yards out hit the post. Iwata 2, Yamagata 1 at full time. Iwata have, I think, 4 points from their opening three matches, and Yamagata have 6. Blaublitz Akita's strong start to the season continued with a second straight 1-0 away win, this time at Fujieda. The vital goal here came in the 16th minute. Akita did really well to win the ball near the Fujieda corner flag out on the Akita right, and eventually Keita Saito crossed for captain Ryutaro Iyo to sweep the ball into the net from about 10 yards. It has to be mentioned that Fujieda marking was not particularly tight, but it was a good goal and a good finish all the same. Very bright performance from Keita Saito in this game. He went clean through and then unfortunately blazed over when he had a good chance to make it 2-0. And in the second half, he even had the confidence to try a chip from just about the halfway line, which ended up not going in. But yeah, very, very impressive or eye-catching performance from him. So Fujieda 0, Akita 1 at full time. Akita have started the season with 3 away games, but they have 3 clean sheets and 7 points to show for that, which is really impressive. Fujieda's 100% record is ended, but their start to life in J2 with 6 points from the first 3 matches is also not bad at all. At Pokhari Sweat Stadium, it finished Tokushima 1, Sendai 1 on Saturday afternoon. Tokushima got a 90th minute equaliser after Sendai had been reduced to 10 men in this match. After an entertaining but goalless first half, Sendai almost went in front when Tokushima keeper Suarez spilled a shot into the path of Everton, but Suarez redeemed himself with a point-blank reaction save from a Brazilian midfielder. But that save led to a Sendai corner from which the visitors did go in front, a towering header from Masahiro Sugata in off the post from Motohiko Nakajima's delivery, so 1-0 to Sendai at the start of the second half. In the 65th minute, Sendai centre-back Kim Taehyun was shown a straight red card. He tugged back Daiki Watari as he tried to latch onto a through ball from Kazuki Nishiya. So that made things a bit more complicated for Sendai. It seemed though like they'd done enough to hold on to the 3 points until that 90th minute equaliser. A deep cross went all the way through to Nishiya at the back post, and he teed up Kiyoshiro Tsuboi to curl in the equaliser from about 14 yards. So Tokushima 1, Sendai 1 was the final score. Tokushima have 2 draws and a defeat from their opening 3 matches, whereas Sendai 1 win and 2 draws. Finally, from the J2 slate on Saturday, there was an even later equaliser at the Transcosmos Stadium, where it finished Nagasaki 1, Shimizu 1, with Akira Disaro rescuing a point for Shimizu with a real goal of the season contender in the 94th minute. Nagasaki went into this game still looking for their first points of the season, and they took the lead 6 minutes before half-time. Ten Miyagi nodded down a right-wing cross from Shunki Takahashi right into the path of Yuya Kuwasaki, who was somehow completely unmarked at the far post and tapped in. And things stayed that way, Nagasaki 1-0 ahead, until Desaro's intervention in the fourth minute of 6 minutes of additional time. The bald eagle controlled the ball on his chest with his back to goal, about 20 yards out, and then in one fluid motion, swiveled and sent a dipping volley over Shuichi Gonda and into the back of the net. I think this is going to be one of the best goals of the season, and if we see many better than this, we'll be in for a treat. But yep, it finished Nagasaki 1. Shimizu won. Nagasaki had to settle for a single point, their first of the season, and Shimizu have drawn all three of their matches so far in J2 this season, and Desaro's wonder goal was actually their first goal of the season, so onwards and upwards for them. Nagasaki won, Shimizu won was the full-time score. All right, I think that's my review of the Saturday action in J2 done with then. So after a quick bit of music, James Taylor is back in town. He's got the review of all of the Sunday games from J2. And after you've heard from James, you'll hear my chat with Lewis about Tokyo Verde and the state of J2 three matches in. So please stay tuned.
Thanks, John. James Taylor here with a review of Sunday's games, starting at the Ishikawa Athletic Stadium, where Dzeigen Kanazawa made six changes to their starting lineup for their first home game of the season against Machida Zelvia. The hosts should have gone ahead in the seventh minute, but Jefferson Baiano headed Leo Baia's cross wide. 4 minutes later, Machida went ahead. Eric found Hokuto Shimoda just inside the area, and he in turn passed to Yu Hirakawa, who ghosted through Ryota Inoue and Shunya Mori to score. Carlos Gutierrez missed a golden opportunity to double the lead just before the break, but he headed over from close range. Then just after the break, it was Kanazawa's turn for a near miss. Baia's free kick from the left was headed onto the bar by Baiano, and William Pop saved Yuya Okuda's follow-up. In the 72nd minute, Kanazawa had the ball in the net, but the whistle had already gone for offside as Baiano blocked teammate Masamichi Hayashi's shot before turning it in himself. Yuto Shirai saved excellently from Shunta Araki in the 82nd minute, but a similar move in the 91st minute saw the Machida substitute score his team's second. Kanazawa did finally score their first of the season through Hayashi in the 9th minute of stoppage time, but they remain pointless after three matches. Machida, in contrast, are unbeaten. The only team with three wins from three in J2 is Oita Trinita. They saw off Tochigi SC thanks to a late goal from Keita Takahata. Not many clear-cut chances in this one until the 57th minute, when a loose ball after a corner fell to Oita's Taira Shige, whose shot was deflected onto the post. From the subsequent corner, Kazuki Fujimoto arrived at the back post but hit the ball over from close in. Oita started to turn the screw after that, and Yamato Machida and Shige again went close. The only goal of the game came in the 82nd minute. A left-footed free kick from the right side of the penalty area curled into the top corner by Takahata. Tochigi are still looking for their first win. Another unbeaten team in action on Sunday was Reno for Yamaguchi, who came away from Iwaki Greenfield with 3 points. Iwaki's Daiki Yamaguchi found space in the area early on, but Reno for goalie Kentaro Seki was down well to save. The home side should have taken the lead in the 17th minute. Kaina Tanimura missed an open goal from 20 yards when Seki and the Yamaguchi defence were caught faffing around. 10 minutes later, Seki gave the ball away, and a neat passing move by Iwaki teed up Tanimura for a shot that he put past the other post. Iwaki were made to pay for their profligacy in the 65th minute when Yusuke Minagawa was on hand to bundle in at a scramble after a free kick from Kensuke Sato. Iwaki are also without a win yet this season. Mito Hollyhock continued their impersonation of 2022 Tokushima Vortis as they drew for the third time. Fajiano Okayama were the visitors to the Keizai Denki Stadium. Ryosuke Maeda almost opened the scoring in the 18th minute, but his shot was cleared off the line by a covering defender, although it looked like it would have curled wide anyway. Okayama's Han Iguan stung the palms of Mito's Louis Yamaguchi in the 36th minute, and 6 minutes later, the deadlock was broken by Takaya Kimura, heading in at the back post after Solomon Sakuragawa had flicked on a cross from the right. Mito equalised 5 minutes into the second half. Mizuki Ando outmuscled Ryosuke Kawano and kept the ball in play at the byline, and his centering pass found Hidetoshi Takada waiting on the penalty spot to sweep home. Ando and substitute Shoji Toyama went close for Mito as they looked for a winner, but it ended 1-1. Okayama's new signing Lukao made an appearance off the bench. Hopefully the injury troubles that marred his time at Matsumoto are behind him. Ruasu Kumamoto will hope to have kick-started their season with a 3-0 home win over Omiya Ardija. The first goal came with 28 minutes played. A low crossfield pass found Takuya Shimamura in acres of space, and he curled a low shot past Takashi Kasahara. The second goal followed soon after, courtesy of Rei Hirakawa, who executed a nimble turn and shot despite the close attention of Omiya defender Yutaro Hakamata. Omiya went down to 10 men in the 81st minute. Niki Urakami misjudged the bounce of a high ball and then tugged down Daichi Ishikawa to make any chance of an Omiya comeback disappear. Yusei Toshida rounded things off for Kumamoto, arriving at the far post to slot under Kasahara in the 94th minute. Jeff United Chiba and Zaspa Kasats Gunma played out an entertaining draw at the Fukuda Denshi Arena. Gunma went in front early on through Hayate Take, who reacted fastest to a spilled shot. Motoki Nagakura could have doubled the lead around the half-hour mark, but Jeff keeper Shota Arai made a splendid save. And down the other end, a quick counter-attack ended with Masatoshi Kushibiki saving a tame shot from Tomoya Miki. Jeff did level things in the 36th minute when Hiro Komori dispossessed Daiki Nakashio on the edge of the Gunma area, cut back and curled a shot that wrong-footed Kushibiki, who'd taken a step to his right, anticipating something else. Komori has scored in every game so far this season. Gunma retook the lead with the final touch of the half, a free kick headed in by Hiroto Hatao that hit the post and wrong-footed Arai, whose fingertips couldn't keep it out as it spun and bounced back over him. Naoki Tsubaki got another equaliser for Jeff in the 62nd minute. Initially, he lost the ball on the left wing, but chased down a defender, regained possession, and curled a shot out of the reach of Kushibiki, scrambling to get across, having moved out of his goal, ready for a pass from a defender. A minute later, Kushibiki saved well from Hiroto Goya on a 3-on-2 Jeff attack, and then he had the final touch of the match, a full-stretch diving save from a Taishi Taguchi shot. 2-2, the final score. And finally, Tokyo Verdy and Vanfore Kofu cancelled each other out in a goalless draw at Ajinomoto Stadium. Peter Utaka thought he'd scored with a header in the 41st minute, but it was called back for offside against Kazushi Mitsuhira, a very late but ultimately correct call. Not many clear chances apart from that until Tomohiro Taira of Verdy turned and shot straight at the keeper with 20 minutes to play. That was it, really. You can hear more about this game and Verdy in general from John and Lewis after a quick break.
Thanks for that, James. John Steele here again for a kind of a deeper discussion about the round 3 J2 action. To help me with that, I'm joined by Lewis at Illusion of Ease on Twitter to talk a little bit about Tokyo Verdy and how they've started the season. Lewis, welcome to the pod. How are you doing?
Good evening. Thank you for having me. Yeah, very well, thanks. All good, despite the game. We are still alive after that absolutely turgid affair.
Yes.
But I'm trying to stay positive.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, we'll get to the game. We'll chisel away at that positivity over the next few minutes, Lewis. Don't worry.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, welcome to the pod, Lewis. I know you've done you did like a kind of season review segment on Tokyo Verdy for us last year, and a season preview in a similar vein to kick off this year. So thanks for your hard work on those, and it's nice to finally put a kind of a voice, you know, talk to you in real time, so to speak.
Certainly. Welcome
to the pod. Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Cheers.
Okay, so that's the positivity dealt with.
Yep.
Lewis, James, I know you haven't heard James's comments on the game at the weekend just yet, but just as a quick refresher for anyone who's coming in fresh, it was Tokyo Verdy 0, Kofu 0 at Ajinomoto on Sunday afternoon. James's review of this game, he managed to get about 30 seconds of content out of the match, and I think I watched the DAZN highlights. They were able to stretch it to about 4 minutes by showing sort of three or four different replays of that disallowed Peter Utaka goal, which was correctly ruled out for offside. So I don't think they're going to be able to shift many DVDs of this game in the online club shop. Lewis, what did you? How was it for you from a Verdy perspective?
It was the nillest of the nil nils. It was awful. It was one of those ones. I feel like, so we've had three performances at Verdy so far this season. The first game, I thought we played really well. Actually, we managed to we possibly didn't do a great deal in the box, but we certainly had enough possession and enough pressure over the course of the game that made me feel pretty confident that we're going to win it. The Oil game, it was a tough one. It was like a really tough of opposition, the best team I've seen so far this season. And I thought we were just outmatched, basically out-battled for that game. This one, I think, was probably the biggest disappointment in terms of just a total like lack of ability to create anything. And it was the kind of part of the problem is that it was quite predictable as well. We kind of went into the beginning of the season like the clear deficiency in the squad this season was a forward, and we went into the season with Joel Fugger seems to prefer is starting with one centre forward and a kind of 4-5-1 going 4-3-3. And that kind of worked when you had someone like people like Arai, Vasquez, and in particular Sato Yoga. But we've lost two of them. And now we are running with Kawamura up front. And God bless his cotton socks, the guy cannot play as a lone centre forward at all. He's actually a decent player. I don't want to be too harsh on the guy because I think he is a decent player, but he's been played in a position he absolutely cannot play at all. He can't hold the ball up well enough, his control is not good enough, and he's not enough of his physical presence to play that role, and nor can Sakano, who we tried with against Oita last week. Kofu started quite well, and I was actually quite worried that we were going to end up in the end of a doing. I thought Utaka started really well. The fellow with the hair.
Mitsuhira.
Mitsuhira and him, I thought, linked up really well for the first half hour or so. They were finding all sorts of space in our midfield, and despite the fact that we're playing like three across the middle, they were getting Kofu were passing through it quite comfortably. And we had basically no outlet other than kind of lumped balls towards Vasquez. And on the left, we played with Kajikawa, who's, I don't know if you know, but we basically played him through the middle last season. He's definitely not like the type of player that's going to run into channels for you. So the whole setup seemed very, very kind of negative, but optimistic. And it just didn't work at all. And again, I think one of the biggest problems currently is Morita. So Morita's appointed the captain this season. He's 22 years old, and he's very well regarded by the rest of the team. Technically quite able, but for some reason tends to kind of disappear, especially as part of a three in midfield. He just vanishes. And I feel like part of his role, when he looks for the ball, he can get things moving a little bit. He can begin to dictate the tempo and that kind of stuff, but he doesn't look for it enough. So we've got this situation where you have like a pretty solid back line looking for midfield players to come forward and take it. It's not really happening, and balls are getting battled into the channels for Vasquez to chase, and it's just not really happening.
Yeah, well, I think kind of your assessment there, and I know you watch from behind the goal at Ajinomoto, and it's quite a distance to the pitch, so I think you've done a really good job of kind of keeping up with the kind of formations and the tactics from there. Every time I watch a game behind the goal in Athletics, you know, track style stadium, it's hard for me to remember anything after it's finished. So yeah, but I think looking at the stats they've got this season, just in terms of goals, right, it kind of bears out what you're saying. Only one conceded.
Yeah.
Away at Oita, who are obviously having a flying start, but just the one goal scored as well. So do you think, you know, based on what you've seen so far, is that kind of binary nature of the scoring, is that likely to persist, do you think?
It's difficult to see how it's not. We've looked a little bit better when we've gone 4-4-2. This is where we started using a bit more of Engels, the new German guy. He came on. He tends to kind of come up and go up front, along with Kawamura, who will generally kind of step off a little bit to the side, like usually on the right. And then we've looked a little bit more dangerous from there. But it feels like Joe Fugger is quite set on this 4-5-1-4-3-3 thing. And I don't see any major changes from that. It feels a little bit like Verdi are kind of like a Rubik's cube. Like we were scoring for fun and conceding for fun in the last 2 years under Horry and Nagai. So we would, you know, we games against like Akita, we'd be up 3-0, not win, and that kind of stuff, and or like getting scudded 7-0 by Albirex, or like going up to Kanazawa and smashing them 4-1 or 4-0, whatever it was. And now it's the complete opposite. It's the complete opposite that we're really really solid in the, across the back line, but there's just no outlet. I'm hopeful though. I'm still hopeful that this is still just a kind of a work in progress, and people like Morita. I'm a big fan of Saito, actually, the guy from Yokohama. I think he looks really decent, and I think if once him and Morita kind of work out exactly what the positions are, and I feel really with Morita, he is a good player, but it's a confidence thing. And I think once he's getting into a little bit of a rhythm, I think there's still the potential for it to massively improve. But I think definitely we're lacking a target man.
Yeah.
That's the biggest issue.
Well, that's kind of something that you picked up on in the season preview as well. So it's kind of, on the positive side, it kind of proves, you know, your onions, you know what you're talking about. But on the negative side, you were right. They're a bit short up front. So, yeah, we'll wait to see. I suppose 3 games in, it's still a bit early to make any kind of definitive judgments, isn't it? But I mean, at the moment, when we were just talking about the league table a little bit before we started recording, I know it's way too early to kind of take it seriously, Lewis, but Verdi are 11th right now. Assuming that they don't have any major kind of ins you know, during the season and kind of the summer transfer window, how much deviation do you think there'll be from sort of mid-table based on what you've seen in the first 3 rounds?
Like, as you say, it's very early doors, but I it's kind of what I predicted at the beginning of the season as well. I think the issue is going to be the lack of firepower. And looking at that table as well, looking at the teams on it, I think it's maybe one of the strongest in a while. I know like Okayama and teams like that have lost a lot of decent players, but a lot of other teams have really strengthened. And I feel like a lot of other teams also, Kumamoto as well, obviously they lost a decent sway of the players, but again I think they're going to be not bad this season either. So yeah, I kind of feel like Verdi are still in that kind of they're still at this kind of stage where they're not anywhere near the kind of finished article. They're in the right direction now and they're under the right coach, but they're still missing that kind of like that final link to make us a proper contender. So yeah, I would say anywhere between 8th and 14th would be my rough bet.
That sounds very familiar. If we if I bring back your Rubik's Cube analogy very briefly, it feels like someone kind of with Verdi, we spend a year solving the first 2 layers, and then it's like you go to bed intending to solve the rest when you wake up, and then someone's scrambled it again, you know, overnight, because you've sold the key pieces of the cube. You know, it's falling. The metaphor's breaking down. You get my drift. It's like you know, they're always. They kind of lurch from being 1 or 2 players short of a top 6 squad, and then the following year, then they're 6 players short, and then the year after that, they're 2 players short again, and you're sort of rubbing your hands with anticipation, and then the players get sold, and the rug gets pulled out from under the squad, doesn't it? I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't think, I don't know too much about, is it Kawamura, the guy that's the lone striker at the moment? I'm not sure that Toyofumi Sakano is really the answer. In J2 at his age. Based on his record, you know, in previous seasons. But we'll wait to see. What about the other team, Kofu, Lewis? Because you talked about them a little bit briefly. You said you were quite impressed in the sort of opening half an hour or so. I kind of felt the same because I watched them. Obviously, it was only a friendly game, but I saw them in the Super Cup match against Yokohama Marinos last month, the kind of the big season curtain raiser. And I still can't work out that they're in that kind of grey zone for him. I'm not sure if they're a good team or not. I know there's certainly some really good players in there. And I've been impressed with Eduardo Mancha, the Brazilian defender this season as well. So what about Kofu? I mean, they're obviously got, I think they've just got a draw and 2 draws and 1 loss so far, so they haven't really started great, but they've got the ACL obviously coming up in the summer. And how did you assess them on Sunday, but also more generally?
They're a funny one because like we all saw them obviously last season in the Tenlohai, the Emperor's Cup, and they were superb. Like they were excellent. They were like worthy winners. Yeah, in the league they were really kind of like really pretty average. I can't remember exactly where they finished, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was like bottom half.
They were 18th.
18th, so you're pretty low. Like, and they're floating there and thereabouts. Yeah, they looked solid, but they were playing us. So that's that's like the kind of massive caveat. But they looked solid enough. Mm. But we didn't really give them a great deal to do. I was quite impressed with the movement of like Utaka. We were talking before we started recording about Utaka and his kind of like his kind of agelessness. And I still think he's a decent player. I would have taken him a Verde in a second, to be honest with you. I think he's got that presence. And him and his movement with Mitsuhira was actually really impressive. So I think if they can get themselves into a bit of a groove, they could probably do better than they did last season in terms of league finish. Mm. But I don't know if whether it's one of those teams that like do they really find their game when they're up against it. Verdi did a little bit of that last season as well, knocking out Frontari and admittedly not very good Jubilo Iwata side last season from the Emperor's Cup. Like the types of clubs that can raise their game when it's, you know, when the mood takes them. Over the season though, I don't know. I don't know if they've got enough to really push for even a playoff. I would probably go with mid-table for them over the season, but I may be horrendously wrong there.
No, that sounds about right to me. I think when I look at Verdi's squad, and don't hang up the Skype call immediately, but I think Verdi's squad looks, you know, to me 5, 6, 7 players short of a playoff, you know, a realistic playoff push. And then Kofu, I would have them slightly better off, but I still think they're 3 or 4 players short. And Kofu have that perennial problem like Verdi of they sometimes get to the point where they're just a couple of players away.
Yeah,
but then the following year they lose 3 or 4 of them. And I think you mentioned the sort of talented players that they've got this year. I've talked about it with James for like Hasegawa in midfield, Torikai. Yeah. They probably would have lost those if they didn't have the ACL coming up. You know, this season.
Yeah, so I think they. Kind of cost by success kind of thing that a lot of clubs experience in J2, I guess.
Yeah, it's Kumamoto are the ones who are really really suffering from that this season, aren't they? But yeah, it's kind of a real, it's a good kind of reminder of the very real pressures that J2 teams have of like, well, you have to be really good, but not too good, not so good that other people notice.
Yeah,
And you have to kind of sneak into J1 by the back door almost.
Yep.
Sort of. Yeah, no, fair enough. Well, I think Mitsuhira in particular, he was his hairstyle has been discussed on the pod many times, but I don't think it did him any favours with that offside decision, did it?
I think it may have been his hair that was offside because it was close.
Yeah, if I was the coach, I'd be like, you know, I think I'd be taking some, I was going to say like clippers or garden shears in with me on Monday morning and say, right, that's coming off.
Yeah. But, that's plenty.
Yes. Old school management. It's probably illegal. Probably illegal now. This
could be Pawahara.
Game's gone. Yeah.
Pawahara.
Right, Luce. Well, we talked a little bit about Verdi and a little bit about Kofu for the weekend. Just before I get your thoughts on the round 4 matches coming up on Saturday and Sunday this week, is there any other kind of storylines or anything you've noticed about J2 so far, Luce, over the first couple of rounds? Is there anything you wanted to get off your chest? I'm just kind of giving you the chance to sort of...
Flag-a-gate at Tokyo Verde. Mm. This is maybe like a more wider point about supporter culture. But there's been a little bit of a stushy, to use a Scottish word, a stramash, a hoo-ha amongst the active support of Verdi about one fan having a very, very big flag that I think a guy that hasn't come to many games complained about it on Twitter, and this kicked off this kind of rather ridiculous storm in a teacup about this big giant flag, and more generally about what the kind of the do's and don'ts are for the kind of the Goruura section, the kind of goal, the section behind the goal, where the ultras usually go, or the kind of more active fans usually go.
Whose side are you on, Lewis? Come on.
I'm on the shut up, mate. It's the ultra section side of the debate. I very much feel like there's plenty of places. I mean, if you've been to a Tokyo Verde game at Ajinomoto, you'll know that there's plenty of seats you don't need to be sitting where you're sitting if you want to avoid a big giant flag. And it's part of the culture. I feel like it's one of the kind of one of the joys of Japanese football in general is the albeit slightly regimented nature of the kind of active support sections, but it adds colour, it adds, you know, adds volume to the stadium, and getting a little bit. I feel like just if you're not into that kind of thing, you don't need to sit there, mate. But anyway, this kind of thing led to this big, gigantic back and forth on amongst the Verdi support, with various very long-winded kind of official apologies made to various people, and it all got a little bit silly, actually.
Well, I thought you tweeted that the flag owner is going to reflect on his actions. Is that right? I'm not really sure what that means.
After that, he even stated that he may not return to the stadium as he disgraced himself so much. We were about two stages away from seppuku at this rate.
Yeah.
I think he got talked down, and it seems like looking at the replies, he's been admonished for his big flag waving. And I think there's the various other kind of elder statesmen of that particular part of the stadium have all stated their desire for more open dialogue amongst the support to get as many people back in the stadium as possible. So hopefully something positive will come of it.
Yeah, but I shall keep my eyes firmly trained on the home goal at Ajinomoto next time.
As will I. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, well, I do think there is. I wouldn't necessarily say a crackdown, but the Yokohama FC have had a similar, and this was just dipping into J1, possibly temporarily, considering the way things are going for Yokohama FC at the moment. But they now have a system of any flags that you want to bring in have to be pre-approved by the club, so you have to kind of show the club what you're planning to waive. And they can veto it or not. And I believe one of the things which is banned now is the kind of skull, any kind of skull iconography.
Really? Okay.
But I believe at Saturday's game, Kashima in the away end did have a flag with said kind of skull and not necessarily skull and crossbones, but just skulls, like white skull on a black background. It's not okay for the Yokohama FC. But a few Yokohama FC supporters were kind of saying on Twitter, how come the away team can bring those, but the home team can't? It seems a bit odd. But to be honest, I'm kind of maybe it's coming from the sort of. Maybe because we're from the UK, we don't necessarily have a flag waving culture at home, so we sort of don't know perhaps what the do's and don'ts would be. But I'm sort of on the same page as you in terms of like, well, you don't have to sit there necessarily, and you sort of kind of know what you're getting into if you do, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a bit of a storm in a teacup, and I think the wider point can be it's probably a sign of how kind of safe and family friendly the stadiums are that this becomes. The talking point, rather than, you know, back home it might be like, well, did the police use the right amount of pepper spray?
Exactly.
was it disproportionate? But we'll have to keep an eye on that. Lewis, do you have a flag or a banner that you wave at games? Or
I do not. No. I got a Kilmarnock banner with the Hiromaru on it that my friend bought me once, but I don't think that's what anybody needs to see. Tokyo Verde game.
Yeah. I'll email the club after this just to make sure that is banned.
But yeah, as a wider point, like the Yaji, the kind of booing and jeering as well. Like I remember, like last season, there was the first game after Verde got after Verde were allowed to reintroduce the singing sections, and we were up 2-0 against Iwate. And chucked it away in the last 2 minutes or 5 minutes or so for a 2-2 draw. And it was relatively cacophonous by Japanese standards of booming. And probably what finally did for Hori, actually, was that kind of clear kind of public acknowledgement that enough was enough in terms of his rather disastrous reign. So booing has its function. But even after that on Twitter, there was a lot of people complaining about even the booing. Said it wasn't nice for kids and that kind of stuff. So your point is, like, absolutely, it says quite a lot about the overall culture in the country here. Like, obviously, coming from the UK, booing is absolutely just de rigueur, especially at Rugby Park. Come on.
Well, I think that, you know, the booing in the UK is a bit like kind of the sort of South Park approach to sort of lampooning people. It's like everybody gets booed.
Exactly.
You boo the referee, you boo the other team, you boo your team, you boo this, you boo that. So it's funny here how that varies. But yeah, I've noticed that too. I'm not really sure I tend to be hands off on this. I think if you've paid your money and you go to the stadium, you can sort of do what you want, more or less. But if you want to boo, that's fine. I don't boo my own team or players usually, because they've never done anything particularly, you know, that deserved it. But I don't. I think the other way is like clapping everything. You know, applauding everything is also a bit funny. So
clapping the referee, not having that.
Yeah, there's got to be a balance. Perhaps the balance isn't quite right. But then we're outsiders here, Lewis. You know, we have to respect the local.
We're in Rome.
Yeah, the local norms.
We're in Chofu.
No, that's right. That's right. That's the nearest sort of civilized point, isn't it?
The wilds.
But yeah, I think it will be a shame to have one thing about Japan that you must have experienced, where this kind of knee jerk thing of like, right, one person complained about a banner, so there's no banners now, and that's not really what we want to see.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I think like you said, it really adds to the atmosphere and the dare I say razzmatazz. Of J2, such as it is, so it would be a shame to have that sort of curtailed in any way. But we'll have to watch that with interest.
We will. Okay. I'll keep you posted.
Good quality digression, Lewis. Thanks for that. Appreciate
you're very welcome. Cheers.
Yes. Okay. So before I let you go, please help me out just to look ahead to the round 4 J2 games coming up at the weekend. Hi again, listeners. John Steele here. Just a quick interjection to say that Lewis and I didn't talk about the Levan Cup games with a J2 interest that were taking place in midweek. So for the sake of completeness, on Wednesday night, March the 8th, Iwata had a game away at Yokohama Marinos from J1, and Shimizu S-Pulse were at home to Kawasaki Frontale. So this is a round one of the group stage of the Levan Cup, which always has two J2 teams in it, the two teams that were relegated from J1 the previous year. So in group stage round one on Wednesday night, it was Iwata away at Yokohama Marinos at the Mitsuzawa Stadium, and Shimizu hosted Kawasaki. And we'll talk a little bit about those games on the pod next week as well. Okay, that's all from me on a Levan Cup tip for now. So back to your regularly scheduled JTET. So there's just three games on Saturday afternoon. That's March the 11th. We've got the 1 o'clock kickoff. That's Kofu against Fujieda. And then two games at 2 p.m. Omiya host Iwata at the NAC 5. And then Yamaguchi, who've made a really good start to 2023, they host Kumamoto. The rest of the weekend games are on Sunday, March the 12th. And kind of annoyingly, there are, I think, seven games all at the same time at 2 p.m. So there's a kind of Tohoku Derby, Sendai hosting Iwaki. Then Akita, another team who've had a great start, they host Jeff Chiba. Tochigi against Nagasaki. It's two teams that have kind of had a bit of a rocky start to the season, I think you could say. Machida host Mito. And it's Shimizu against Oita. That's Oita on three straight wins and top of the table against Shimizu, who've drawn all three games so far. So something's got to give there, you feel. It's Okayama hosting Kanazawa. And a game that I'm sure we're going to talk about in a second, Tokushima against Tokyo Verdy. And to round off the weekend at 5 p.m. on Sunday, it's Gunma hosting Yamagata at Shoda Stadium. So, Lewis, I know you'll have both eyes on the Tokyo Verdy game at Tokushima, I suppose. But for anyone listening, where should they be focusing their attentions, do you think, on the round 4 slate?
Good question. I don't think there's anything that massively stands out to me, especially at this stage of the season in terms of like that. I don't think there's any kind of like crunch match or anything. There's anything, nothing grudgy from that collection. For me personally, I'm just really interested to see if Zelvia and Oita can keep it up. You know, Zelvia being one of those clubs that there's been a lot of done at that club, and I think it's going to be really exciting to see whether they can actually kind of maintain that momentum. So I would probably maybe Shimizu as well. I think maybe the Trinita game would probably be the one I'd watch as a neutral. So Shimizu and Oita Trinita. I think Oita look, again, they're nothing spectacular, but very, very organised, very, very solid. I think, is it Nomura? I think he's a really good player. They're kind of midfielder. If it was me, I'd probably be watching, if I wasn't watching Verdy, I'd probably be watching the Shimizu Trinita game for me. I think that's are the most interesting ones.
No, I think they're a good chance. I think on Machida against Mito, I don't think it's too surprising to anyone to see Machida kind of riding high with 7 points from the first nine. Oita, I sort of trashed them a little bit in the season preview because I thought the squad looked a lot weaker. They've made me look silly so far because they're the only team with a 100% record, right, after three games.
But yes. Yep.
Yeah, Shimizu have drawn all three. And I know they needed a kind of last-minute goal or stoppage-time goal to get a point at the weekend, but there's obviously a good squad in there at Shimizu. So I think Shimizu Oita, you're probably right. That might be, based on what we've seen in the first three rounds, that's probably the sort of most intriguing game. I'll just mention real quick, I forgot to mention earlier, I think for Akita hosting Jeff Chiba, that's Akita's first home game.
Oh, okay.
They've had the first three away because the winter conditions. So I think that will mean... I haven't double checked this, so this is off the cuff. I think that will mean everybody will have had at least one home game after round four. So Akita have had this, great start, but with this kind of, you know, three-way games. They had a 0-0 draw at Gunma, and then two, I don't know if it's fair to call them both smash and grabs, but two sort of 1-0 very Akita away wins to see them kind of riding high. I think they're in fourth, so if they can kind of keep that momentum going with home games as well, it could be really interesting. First few months of the season for them, I think.
Yeah. Definitely. And there's a type of thing that you like to see as well. You like to see these kind of like more provincial, less fashionable sides doing really well. And, you know, I like to see teams like blue and white have a good run of it. So, yeah, good luck to them. That could be a good one as well, definitely.
Yeah, fair. You never know what you're going to get with Jeff, of course. That could be
Wacky Jeff.
That could be 5-1, 1-5, or probably 0-0 again. We probably cursed it now. But plenty. I think you're right in what you say, Lewis. I don't think there's a kind of standout game on the slate. But as usual, there's going to be plenty to enjoy or to raise an eyebrow at, I think, by Sunday evening. So. All right, I think we can leave it there, Lewis, for our chat, if that's okay. Thanks for coming on. I hope that wasn't too painful. Hope you enjoyed it.
Not at all. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
Fantastic.
But yeah, pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Hopefully we can have you back on to discuss Verdi sort of going goal crazy in the months ahead. But
last week of the season looked very 12th.
No. There's still 39 games to go. So, no time to... no need to press the panic button just yet, I don't think. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Lewis. And we'll leave it there for now. But please keep listening. Please stay tuned because in a moment, Magic Mike Innes has got all the J3 roundup from a very, very exciting first match day. His review of the round one action in J3 is coming up in J Talk Short Corner in a moment. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host Mike Innes and in this episode I'll be looking back on fixtures in round one of the new J3 season, as well as previewing the round two matches coming up this weekend. Kicking off the campaign, there were three games on Saturday the 4th of March, with late drama in each of them. Pre-season promotion favourites Kagoshima United began at home to J-League newbies FC Osaka, and there was also early drama in this one, as Osaka stunned their hosts with a goal inside the first 2 minutes. Rui Tone and Kazu Yamima combined to cross the ball from the left for Takumi Shimada to side foot in a volley. Having fallen behind, Kagoshima were roared on by a home crowd of 5,999. Debutants Shuntaro Kawabe and birthday boy Shota Suzuki both missing good chances to pull level. At last, with the clock ticking down into the 89th minute, the begloved Junki Goryo swung in a corner kick and Kenta Hirose rose above Ryusei Saito to head home the equaliser. Then, in injury time, Kagoshima completed the turnaround as Takumi Yamaguchi's blocked shot ricocheted into the air and Atsushi Satsukawa controlled the loose ball to slam it home. Final score, Kagoshima 2, Osaka 1. The determination of Naoto Otake's side claiming the win when all seemed lost. After their flying start, Ryo Shigaki's Osaka team were on the defensive for most of the match and fell apart in the closing moments. SC Sagamihana have experienced a tempestuous winter under new coach Kazuyuki Toda, a major squad clear-out, meaning they began their match at home to Gainare Tottori with no fewer than 9 new signings in the starting 11. And a tough first half for Toda's team saw them go in 2-0 behind. Ex-Sagamihana player Makoto Fukoin curling in a 20-yard free kick for a 7th-minute opener. And then, 9 minutes before the break, Kentaro Shigematsu pounced to fire a shot inside the far post when rookie Kosei Makiyama and forward-turned-defender Ibrahim Junior Kuribara had both failed to clear a loose ball. It was all looking ominous for the home side, but in the second period, they came out fighting and pulled a goal back on 52 minutes as Takumu Fujinuma crossed from the left. Ko Watahiki outfought Mun Inju, leaving striker Akira Matsuzawa to score on his debut. 11 minutes later, Matsuzawa returned the compliment with a through ball that set up Fujinuma to sprint past Kosuke Masutani, round keeper Kaito Ioka, and finish into an open net for 2-2. But Sagamihana weren't able to push on from there, and a final twist came in the 93rd minute. Lively Gainare substitutes exploiting a tiring opponent as Hideyatsu Ozawa advanced into the box to set up Ryosuke Tamura, who easily evaded Riku Hashimoto to score from 12 yards. Final score, Sagamihana 2, Tottori 3, a performance and result that raises more questions than it answers for Kazuyuki Toda, while for Gainare, coach Kim Jong-song's game management was just good enough to take the points. FC Ryukyu returned to J3 with a home match against Vanrare Hachinohe, a low-key fixture illuminated just before the break by a fantastic goal from Ryukyu striker Kelvin, who juggled the ball round Vanrare captain Naoyuki Yamada and lashed home an angled shot from the edge of the area. Hachinohe pressed infrequently, and the late drama here centred on Ryukyu's recent signing Mu Kanazaki, who, having come on as a half-time substitute, waited until the closing seconds to make his first contribution in a red shirt, as the 34-year-old was sent off for leading with his elbow in a challenge with Kordai Minoda. Final score, Ryukyu 1, Hachinohe 0. Kelvin's skill and strength winning it for the hosts. As predicted, a lack of goal threat from Vanrare. The other 7 games were all on Sunday the 5th, and the only place to start is the Ninjaneer Stadium, home of Ehime FC, where the visitors were the team relegated alongside Ryukyu, Iwate Gruja Morioka. New Iwate coach Yoshika Matsubara fielded a team that included 6 close-season signings, but he can hardly have believed how easy Ehime would make it. Gruja took the lead in only the 6th minute, the unmarked Tsuyoshi Miyaichi burying a header from a Kairi Shinbo corner. Midway through the half, Shinbo produced another assist, threading a pass for Sota Kiri to run onto and finish with skill and composure, leaving Ehime defender Reiya Morishita on the floor as he did so. Early in the second half, things improved further for the visitors, who racked up 3 more in 15 minutes. First, Masakazu Tashiro slotted home following a poorly defended Shinbo free kick, reasonable-looking claims for offside on this one. Then, incredibly, Ehime again left Miyaichi entirely free for yet another Shinbo set piece, again dispatched with a firm header for 4-0. And in the 64th minute, Shinbo, on loan from Renofa Yamaguchi and a first teamer at Miyazaki last year, registered a goal of his own, sending, yes, a free kick over the wall and beyond the half-hearted dive of Kenta Tokushige. Wonderland for Matsubara and Iwate, a true nightmare for Kiyotaka Ishimaru and his Ehime team, 5-0 down at home after barely an hour of the first game of the season. They did manage a consolation when Ryo Sato nodded in Asahi Yada's cross, training ground style, the nearest thing to a further score coming when Douglas Oliveira hit Tokushige's post with a clever snap shot. Final score, Ehime 1, Iwate 5. The home team's defensive disarray suggesting a complete lack of preparedness. Gruja surely won't have it so simple again this season. Neighbours and rivals AC Nagano Parseiro and Matsumoto Yamaga both began the 2023 campaign with away victories. Nagano at Tagabajano Miyazaki, Matsumoto at reigning JFL champions Nara Club. Yamaga forward Ren Komatsu was at the centre of his team, taking a deserved lead in the 31st minute, as first at a corner kick he was wrestled to the ground by defender Daisei Suzuki, then was pushed over by homekeeper Arnau as he retrieved the ball to take the resulting penalty, which he duly converted into the bottom corner. Suzuki got a yellow card, Arnau amazingly got away with it. At the other end, Victor then produced a double save from Hayato Asakawa and Sou Kataoka as Nara came close to their first ever J-League goal, Asakawa soon afterwards screwing a close-range shot just wide. The clincher for the visitors came 6 minutes from time, a solo effort by young substitute Kaiga Munakoshi, who took the ball from the halfway line, evaded the challenge of Wataru Ise and sent a 20-yard shot inside the left-hand post. Final score, Nara 0, Matsumoto 2. 4,808 people there to see the J-League debutants put on a respectable performance. Yamaga, though, had the clinical edge. Meanwhile, at Miyazaki, Nagano took a fifth-minute lead through Kohei Shin, whose poked shot trickled inside the post after some impressive combination play down the left by Yuta Sato and Hayate Sugi. Tegevajano almost drew level on two occasions during first-half injury time. First, when Kenta Okuma curled a free kick onto the top of the bar, then when Sota Higashide's close-range effort was cleared off the line. Miyazaki turned up the heat in the second half with a raft of substitutions, one of whom, teenage starlet Harumi Minamino, drew a save from Sōki Yatagai with an overhead kick. But with 4 minutes to go, the home side conceded on the counter-attack. Parseiro moving the ball out from near their own corner flag, eventually reaching Naoki Sanda for a powerful finish with his left foot. Tegevajano continued to press and Yatagai was again called into action in the closing stages, tipping over a shot from sub Kakeru Aoto, but it finished Miyazaki 0, Nagano 2. Some good football from Hiroshi Matsuda's Tegevajano, but they couldn't keep it going for the full 90 minutes. A professional display to take the points from Parseiro. Another pre-season contender, Katare Toyama, came away with a win from their game at YSCC Yokohama. The hosts had difficulty dealing with Katare's wide players, new keeper Jun Kodama needing to produce a point-blank save to keep out a Nobuyuki Shina header after Ryuya Ohata's overlapping run and cross. When the opening goal eventually came in first half stoppage time, it was no surprise the source was a flighted cross by Daichi Matsuoka, Shunta Takahashi's careful header guiding it into the net. In the 64th minute, Matsuoka and Ohata teamed up brilliantly to slice open the home defence and set up Tsubasa Yoshihira, whose far post volley went in off the underside of the bar for 2-0. The Toyama goal was not often in danger, but YSCC did pull one back with 11 minutes left, veteran Daisuke Matsui converting from under the crossbar after Kento Dodate had flicked on Takahiro Nakazato's corner. Final score, YSCC 1, Toyama 2, the hosts' second best throughout. And was Katane's Matsuoka putting down a marker for a breakout season? Another potential challenger, FC Imabari, made heavy weather of it, but emerged with 3 points from their game at home to Fukushima United. This marked the first competitive match at their shiny new Imabari Satoyama Stadium, a club record 5,424 people in attendance for the occasion. Coach Riki Takagi made some surprising selections. No Takuro Uehara or Keishi Kusumi, new signing Hiroshi Futami starting on the bench. But it was the familiar names of Marcus Vinicius, Yuta Mikado and Kazaki Nakagawa who had the most impact. The breakthrough came with 14 minutes left. Mikado running on to a pass by Takafumi Yamada and delivering a clever flick across the face of goal for Nakagawa to head in. Fukushima could have grabbed a late equaliser, but Shoki Nagano and Shun Obu got in each other's way at the crucial moment and Kota Mori's follow-up shot was saved by Cervantes. Final score, Imabari 1, Fukushima 0. The home side, not the finished article, but they claimed the win. A hard-working performance by Fukushima, but they couldn't withstand the pressure. Along the Shikoku coast at the Pikara Stadium, Kamatamare Sanuki against Azul Claro Numazu turned out to be an action-packed encounter. How Masashi Nakayama's Azul Claro managed not to score in this game is a question for the ages. Naoko Sato missing a great chance and drawing a great save from Takuya Takahashi, Kotaro Tokunaga and Hagumi Wada both having shots cleared off the line in an extended goalmouth scramble that had much in common with performance art, Takuya Sugai also having a shot cleared off the line in a separate incident. And all this is to draw a veil over Wada's truly terrible attempt at a one-on-one with Takahashi. All Kamatamane had in terms of attacking efforts were a handful of wayward shots by Yuto Mori. But again, substitutions proved decisive. Sanuki coach Atsushi Yonayama throwing on big striker Himan Morimoto, who in the 90th minute out-muscled Kenshiro Suzuki and provided a perfect layoff for Ikki Kawasaki to whip in across to the far post, where another sub, Gentaro Yoshida, timed his run brilliantly to tuck it beyond ex-Kamatamare keeper Kenta Watanabe. Final score, Sanuki 1, Numazu 0. The Noodle Boys displaying an unfamiliar resilience to keep themselves in the game and steal it at the end. Azul Claro will wonder how they came away with nothing, but may reflect on a lack of composure. And finally, the only draw of the opening round was between Gidomance Kitakyushu and FC Gifu. The visitors' opener on 20 minutes was simplicity itself, a long through pass from Yoshihiro Shoji freeing up Charles Unduka, who raced beyond Takeaki Homura and Kota Muramatsu to produce a confident angled finish. Soon afterwards, some good skill by Ryo Kubota set up a chance for Kensei Ukita, whose shot for 2-0 was blocked by keeper Yuki Kato. The Guinevance fans had little attacking play to cheer about until 9 minutes from the end, when Yuki Okana's corner was met by a big and basic header from Takaya Inui, which flew beyond Gifu's former Kitakyushu keeper Takuya Matsumoto and in. And from another Okana corner moments later, rookie Ko Seung-jin could have won it but put his own header off target. Final score, Kitakyushu 1, Gifu 1. Both sides have undergone major changes over the closed season, but on this evidence, they're as closely matched as last year. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round two fixtures over the weekend, when there are three games on Saturday, the 11th of March. There's a big early season meeting between Kagoshima and Imabari. The two relegated sides meet up again. It's Ryukyu against Iwate. Tottori will hope for another winning trip to Kanagawa as they visit YSCC. Then on Sunday the 12th, it's Ehime against Nagano in what suddenly looks a compelling fixture. Round 1 winners Matsumoto travel to Gifu and Toyama are at Numazu. Can the promoted sides pick up their first points? Nara are at home to Hachinohe. FC Osaka head back down south to Miyazaki. Kitakyushu play host to Sanuki. And finally, it's Sagamihana against Fukushima. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.